Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. You may have noticed over the past week that there was not a casino question on the ballot when you went to the polls on Tuesday. And that's because, if you recall, last year voters in Ohio approved a casino amendment. It seems like a lifetime ago, but voters approved an amendment to the Ohio Constitution which allowed for four casinos in Ohio, one in Toledo, one in Columbus, one in Cincinnati, and one in Cleveland. And also, as part of that amendment, the voters approved a new commission, the Ohio Casino Control Commission, which is basically the enforcement agency which will oversee these casinos when they get up and running. And the person who has been nominated to chair the commission is Rocky Saxby, Columbus attorney, and he joins us on All Sides.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let's first get to the politics, and then we can get to what this commission is going to do. You were appointed by Ted Strickland. He lost on Tuesday. Do you expect to be confirmed before the legislature finishes out this term? And do you expect to be the chairman of this commission come January or February?
Well, I'm not sure what to expect. Frankly, the commission currently has been appointed. We've had our first meeting, our second meeting scheduled for Monday. At the moment, we have no staff, no budget, no office, so we're pretty much operating out of our hip pocket with certain deadlines set in statute by the legislature for us to hit. The first is January 10th, when we have to have our rules for operation of the casinos drafted and submitted to the Joint Committee on Rules That's going to be a hard mark to hit, but as far as confirmation, we do have to be confirmed by the Ohio Senate. If we're not confirmed by – if the Ohio Senate does not take up our confirmation, then we are automatically confirmed. I anticipate that there will be some attention to this given by the Republican Senate just based on what I've read. But at the moment, I'm assuming that the process will go forward and our confirmation will be considered.
Have you talked to Senate President Harris or Governor-elect Kasich about your status? I know they're probably pretty busy these days, but
I've not. I've invited the lead sponsors from both the House and the Senate and representatives of the minority caucuses in the House and the Senate to join us for our second meeting on Monday, where they'll hopefully provide us some insight into really what their priorities were when they drafted the law and what their expectations are with respect to the confirmation process.
Okay. Assuming you get confirmed, assuming this commission is confirmed and goes forward with their work, and whoever sits on this commission, they'll have work to do, what is your role?
Well, we're not only the enforcers, as you discussed, but we're the regulators and essentially the partners with the casino operators in managing, operating, and regulating the casinos to ensure that they're legitimate, that they adhere to the laws that have been crafted by the legislature. We're going to have enormous responsibility for oversight from everything from security and law enforcement to the computerization of these casinos to the hiring of staff and background checks.
So you set all the rules.
We set all the rules. And the legislature has already put into statute certain guidelines that the casinos have to meet. So our responsibility is to recruit and manage a staff that could be as large as 150 overseeing the day-to-day operations of the casinos.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation with speaking with Rocky Saxby. He's the new chairman of Ohio's new Casino Control Commission, 292-8513. Our question is, what rules do you think should apply to these new casinos? We don't want to fight the casino fight over again because that's been settled. Now we have these casinos coming, or at least they're planned to come, and now we want to find out how they should be regulated. How big a how do you go about finding, I mean, the legislature has given you the guidelines, and you have to take it one step further. Do you look to other states to see what they're doing? Do you collaborate with other casino commissions in Indiana or Pennsylvania?
We're looking at the rules that have been developed for the operation of the casinos in a number of states. Casinos have become a very popular source of public revenue. It's a tax of the willing, they say. And so we are looking at, we'll be looking thoroughly at the regulations from a number of states, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Mississippi, of course, Nevada, and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to pick Ohio-specific rules, and so we'll be picking and choosing after viewing these other states. We may well craft our own unique Ohio rules and regulations, but we don't need to set out to reinvent the wheel when we adopt these rules.
What is your philosophy for regulating casinos?
Well, number one, you have to assure the public who are going to these gaming establishments that they are on the up and up, and also recognize that these casinos are designed to generate money for the operators and for the state. So we have to make sure that the technology, the machinery, the slots, the games are all legitimately operated and that they're managed by people who pass the appropriate background checks that everyone will have to go through who may be a key employee in running these casinos. We're going to need to have a security staff to ensure that gaming is on the up and up, that you don't have cheaters and boosters coming into the casinos and cheating. We have a responsibility for ensuring the construction of the casinos is consistent with local zoning, local construction, and that the regulations that govern these kind of construction and engineering projects are met. One of the big challenges will be to coordinate our work with local government. Most of the money that's generated, most of the public money that's generated from casinos will go to local governments, townships, and municipalities. And they will be taking on greater responsibility for law enforcement, for infrastructure development. Mm-hmm. And so we have to ensure that the casinos collaborate and are good neighbors and work well with their local government hosts.
We're speaking with Rocky Saxby. He is the new chairman of the Ohio Casino Control Commission here on All Sides on WOSU. One thing you cannot change is the deal.
That's right.
33% of the revenue, or 33% tax rate on the gross revenues and things like that. You can't touch any of that in the commission. You're getting down into the weeds now and setting the rules and make sure they play fair.
Right. Whether or not you like or believe that gambling is moral or immoral or is a risk to the community. The constitutional amendment was passed, and it was passed on the premise that it was going to generate jobs for Ohioans, and it was going to generate enormous amount of money for local and state government. In order to do that, we need to get busy in building the casinos. We need to get busy in seeing that they are ready to open and that our systems are in place. And I talked about security, auditing, IT, local government coordination. So for every day that these casinos are not up and running, we're losing money. So our job is to see that the rules are put in place, the casinos are properly constructed, the people are hired, our regulatory staff is recruited and hired and competent, our accounting and auditing people are ready to go. And that's going to take some time.
Okay. Rocky Saxby is our guest here. He's the new chairman of the Ohio Casino Control Commission. You've taken some criticism because your firm represents a West Virginia gaming company that owns Scioto Downs.
Right.
So your firm is close to the gaming industry. Some feel that that presents a conflict of interest for you as chairman of the Ohio Casino Control Commission. Does it?
Well, the Ohio ethics laws, now supplemented by specific ethics restrictions in the new casino law, spell out what constitutes conflicts of interest. And none of those apply to me. My firm had represented Scioto Downs until it was sold to the Mountaineer Company out of West Virginia. Mountaineer would not be regulated by this commission. And if any matter relating to a client or a former client of my firm came up, whether it's Mountaineer or anybody else, I would clearly have an ethical duty to recuse myself. Mm-hmm. So some people think that it's a conflict. I've asked the Ohio Ethics Commission to give me an advisory opinion because the primary fundamental responsibility of our commission is to be above any kind of questions regarding our integrity or our ethical conduct. And I'm an attorney. I deal with questions of conflicts of interest every day. If the legislature believes this would have been a conflict, I think they would have addressed it in the law. And I have really only one newspaper that has a problem with this.
I wonder which one that would
be. Me too. Columbus
Dispatch wrote an editorial, but the Cleveland Plain Dealer endorsed your appointment, so to balance those two out. Have you ever personally represented a gaming interest? You said your firm has represented the clients at Scioto Downs, but you personally, have you worked on these cases?
I've never really – I can't recall any matter that I've worked on for Scioto Downs. And as I indicated, it was sold – I think back in 2005 to Mountaineer, and our work has been de minimis with respect to Mountaineer.
And you've also promised to forego any profits your firm might get from casino business down the road.
Right. Okay. It's kind of, for me, nothing from nothing is nothing. So it was not a hard commitment to make.
One more question on the regulation. You know, the amendment for good and for bad, basically gave these two companies that own these casinos a monopoly on gaming in Ohio. Does that put more pressure on the commission to make sure they play fair because the market is not there, a competitive market is not there to make sure that everything is on the up and up?
I'm not sure that's going to be our biggest challenge. Both of these casino operators have a lot of experience with this type of situation. I think it's fair to say Ohio got rolled on the constitutional amendment. We didn't have any legislative input into the constitutional amendment, and it passed as it was written by the casino companies. I think our real challenges will be with gambling and gaming in general, and where it will go, whether our responsibilities will be enlarged to deal with other types of gaming, internet gaming. In July, the commission begins to oversee skill-based games. So it's
– I love that name, skill-based games.
Skill-based games.
The skill is opening the door and putting your money down.
That's right. That's right. You know, trying to get those extra games on the pinball machine.
Yeah.
But that's really where our challenge is going to be in the future, is dealing with gambling and gaming as it enlarges in a state which has accepted gaming now as a revenue for public operations.
Okay. Thanks very much. Rocky Saxby, the new chair of the Ohio – Casino Control Commission, thanks for joining us on All Sides.
Thanks, Mike.
When we return, we'll look at the requests of the Columbus Casino developer of the city to help it with its bills, its tax bills and its water and sewer bills. We'll talk about that when All Sides continues on WOSU.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. At noon, Fresh Air begins with a crusading attorney general. Elliot Spitzer made some powerful enemies before a sex scandal ended his political career. On the next Fresh Air, a documentary filmmaker spoke with Spitzer's Wall Street adversaries as well as the madam of his escort service. The new film is Client 9. Join us for Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from Columbus School for Girls. Information about curriculum in an all-girl environment is available at their admission open house, offering tours and meet and greets with faculty and students. Sunday, November 7th at 1 p.m. More at columbusschoolforgirls.org.
48 degrees in downtown Columbus. A slight chance of rain today, otherwise partly sunny, a high of 54. A chance of rain after midnight tonight, a low of 35 degrees. And there is a chance of rain mixing with some light snow Friday morning. And then a high of 43. All Sides continues on to WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We continue our discussion about casinos in Ohio. We'll zero in on the Columbus Casino. To refresh your memory, voters last November approved the casino amendment, which put four casinos in Ohio, including one in the Arena District in Ohio, in Columbus here. There was protests about that, and eventually the powers that be and city officials convinced Penn National, the developer of the Columbus Casino, to move it. And voters went back to the polls in May and moved the casino from the Arena District over to the west side, the site of the former Delphi Automotive Plant. And that's where work has begun to prepare that site for a new casino. But now Penn National is stuck with two sites. And the company says that developing the west side casino is more expensive, and they are asking the city for tax incentives and lower water and sewer bills. And joining us to talk about this is Bob Battelli. He's the City Hall reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Bob, in the casino business, these are called comps, fees, or freebies designed to get you in the casino to spend more. Is that what the casinos are looking for here?
It might be. It's a little more expensive than a free cocktail, though. they've asked for incentives that I tried to total up what they might cost, and it looks like it would be at least $10 million initially, and then some of them would continue indefinitely.
Refresh my memory, how much money was the casino supposed to give back to the city as part of the amendment that was passed?
The city, under the amendment that voters in Ohio approved last year, the Penn National's own estimates were that Columbus would receive more than $24 million a year from the gross revenue tax, and Franklin County would get about $16 million a year.
So they're basically looking for a third of what they would have given the city and county.
20%. They want a tax. They want the county and city to return 20% of their gross revenue tax, which would equal about $8 million a year, and then the other incentives would be on top of that.
Could you explain a little further why they want some help from the city?
Well, Penn National, when I talked to them for a story a couple weeks ago, said that people might remember after the election last fall, when there started a movement to talk about either stopping the casino in the Arena District or moving it somewhere else, Penn National came to Columbus and said they don't want any help from government. They're going to pay for everything themselves. After they agreed to look at a different site, and that went on the May ballot, their representatives say that the project became an economic development project. They agreed to go to an old factory site on the west side in an area that could use jobs and any spinoff development. And that became more of a traditional economic development project as opposed to going in the Arena District, which is already developed.
And successful.
Right.
So that's why they compare themselves to Easton or other projects
they
around town.
To Easton, to Polaris, to the Gowdy Field project near off of 315. Traditional things that the city has helped.
So what are they looking for, tax abatements?
They would like the $8 million in the gross revenue tax to come back to the area around the casino near West Broad and I-270 to pay for roads and improvements in the infrastructure there. They've asked the city for about $900,000 in credits to extend water and sewer to the site to increase the capacity there. They've asked for discounted rates on their water and sewer bills, which I'm told would be hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They've asked for the city to help them apply for state incentives for environmental cleanup, for job development, things like that. And they've asked for the city to pay for some of the cost of infrastructure improvements.
Mm-hmm. 292-8513. We're speaking with Bob Vitale, Dispatch Metro reporter, about the planned Columbus Casino on the west side and whether or not the city should offer them some tax breaks, some other incentives to help them get the casino up and running. Bob, the problem is the casino's not in Columbus yet.
Right. And that's the leverage Penn National has. The site is still part of Franklin Township. Before the statewide ballot measure in May that approved the move to the west side, Penn National said they wanted to be in the city of Columbus. They had every intention to annex. They've said that the fact that the site hasn't been annexed yet is not part of a request for incentives, that they're two separate tracks and you know, this is just the annexation is a bureaucratic measure they haven't gotten around to yet. So they're not saying that they're holding annexation out in order to get these incentives from the city.
What happens if the annexation does not occur?
Well, Franklin Township would be getting an awful lot of money as the host community for the casino. And Franklin Township trustees have said, two of them at least have said they'd welcome it to stay in Franklin Township. The problem is the city will not extend Columbus water and sewer service without annexation. So unless someone else can come in and provide them water and sewer, I don't think they can develop it without annexation.
You don't think the gamblers want to, play the slots and then go to the nearby gas station in Columbus?
Perhaps.
To use the bathroom.
I've never taken myself away from a slot machine long enough to run across the street.
292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Is this, you mentioned that, there's the annexation issue, there's the request for incentives. Is this really, sort of a poker game where both sides are trying to get the best deal they can and maybe bluffing each other? And
it seems to be that way. They've said that talks are constructive. City council members have said that they believe Penn National should keep the promise it made after the election last year, that they will do it on their own without city help. Although, actually, Penn National, when they announced the move to that they would agree to a move to the west side, they opened the door a little bit to government incentives. They, I remember that day at the press conference on the west side, mm-hmm. They said that, they would be open to state help for cleanup.
They used terms like promises or made or we're willing to work with the city. It wasn't just we'll move and start all over again. Because they're on the hook for the Arena District site, and that's lost some value.
They paid about $33 million, I believe, for that land, and it's worth a lot less now that it's not the only place a casino can be built in Columbus. So they took
$30 million write-off or something like that.
Right, on the property in their last financial report. So it's a land that's not worth as much as it used to be, and I think some people think they'd like a little help with that.
Okay. 292-8513, if you'd like to talk about the casino issue here in Columbus, and let's go to the phones. Vicki, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just had a question. I'm listening, and first of all, I'll just come clean and say I voted against having that gambling, period. But mm-hmm. what's the incentive? Somebody needs to explain that to me. Why should the city be extending those kinds of benefits to, and I'm not talking about water and sewer, I'm talking about like those kinds of tax rebates, I guess you'd call it, mm-hmm. to the city, to Penn National. I mean, you do know that they're going to make so much, the boatload of cash they're going to be making. I don't see what the benefit is to us to make it easier for them to make more money at the expense of the taxpayers.
Okay. Bob, that's the argument, that they got a good deal. Why are they asking for more?
Right. The city's interest in this is obviously that, you know, if a casino is built on the west side and is successful, there will be, you know, restaurants that want to build near a casino. There will be other businesses that would view that area as desirable, which will lift the entire area. So the city has that interest of seeing a part of town that struggled in the past revitalized. So the city does that with other employers that come to town. They'll regularly improve roads around the area. They'll widen streets. They will, you know, offer incentives. They'll offer, you know, part of the income taxes that are paid by employees back to the employer in order to lure companies here. I think the argument against it is that Columbus didn't have to lure Penn National here. The voters of Ohio decided that Penn National would build in Columbus. So,
yeah. 292-8513, if you'd like to speak with Bob Vitale about the Columbus Casino, which should be built, could be built on the west side of Columbus. Bob, I mean, the undercurrent here is it seems like there were some promises made, because Penn National didn't fight the request to move to the west side. In fact, actually helped with that campaign and was fully on board with the city officials and other business interests downtown. From your reporting, do you get the feeling that they were given some promises that maybe they're not seeing at this point?
The city officials insist there were no promises made, that there were no promises made in writing or verbally to get them to agree to the west side. Penn National hasn't said that there were promises made, but mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of people feel that there was at least some discussion that there would be help either with the arena district land or, you know, with construction on the west side.
Yeah, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, and a wink and a nod perhaps, but anyway. Now, Penn National owns Beulah Park down in Grove City, and we assume that the slot machines are coming to the racetracks at some point. It's being held up right now. Is there any chance that Penn National could use that as a bargaining chip, say, you know what, we're just going to stick with our slots at Beulah Park and until you guys figure out what we should do on the west side?
I've not heard any of that. Someone brought up whether they could, you know, build something temporarily at Beulah Park, but I don't think they can because the Constitution dictates the west side land. So
what do you see? What's the next step in this process? Now, Penn National has said these aren't demands. These are starting points for discussion.
They're options.
Yes.
Well, you know, back in April and May, when the city and Franklin Township have reached an agreement on sharing tax revenue and property taxes and annexation, things like that, city folks said that they expected the land to be annexed by September. So and now we're in November, and there's not been step one made toward annexation. So that's still out there. You know, both sides say that the talks are constructive. The mayor's chief of staff, when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, said that, you know, the representatives from Penn National are honorable people and that they've been, you know, negotiating constructively. So, they're not bad-mouthing each other, certainly.
Yes, they've been civil, and they really, this whole process, even after the vote in November, it seems like they were trying to work out some kind of an agreement to
right.
So they both could live together.
Right.
Let's go to the phones, and Ralph, you're on the air.
Yes, my opinion on this is, and I don't have any, I'm not a gambler, and I probably don't wouldn't use the casino but once a year maybe. But, you know, if this were any other business coming to Columbus, Ohio, and building what they're going to build and employing the number of people they're going to employ, it's a no-brainer. You help them out. And this is the same thing. And these guys are still stuck with the land of the Arena District. I would say, hey, let's cooperate and build what they need and, you know, give them a fair deal. They're not asking for the end of the world and certainly nothing that's out of the ordinary. I just would go do it.
Ralph, let me quote Sandy Tice, who is a panelist on my TV show Columbus on the Record and also worked to against the casino amendment last year. She said the difference is that Easton, which got tax help, does not have a monopoly on retail malls in Ohio, but the casinos do, and that's why the state and the city should not help them out.
Well, I understand that, but in an economy that wants jobs and we want to get things moving quickly rather than not quickly, I would simply say, yes, let's do it. And besides, we're going to have to do something with that area anyway, and they're going to help make that happen.
Okay.
Here, this is one thing, too, at Penn National in this proposal to the city, and it's labeled non-binding. But you know, like the caller said, they're offering definite benefits to the city. They're cleaning up an old factory site that has a lot of pollution. They're developing the casino there. Part of their commitment that they're proposing is that they will also build a hotel at the site.
Mm-hmm.
They're investing, you know, several hundred million dollars in the project. They're offering to, you know, a diversity plan for their hiring of employees. They're offering, I think, you know, that the construction jobs would pay prevailing wages. So they're offering benefits as well.
Let's go to another call. Al has a different take. Go ahead, Al.
Yes. You know, they have the best deal in gambling that there's ever been perpetrated. They are, compared to other states and other venues, they are paying only $200 million for their license, and it should be a half a billion. They are paying only 33% for a tax on the money withheld. It ought to be at least 50 or maybe 65%. They're going to make a ton of money, and they're going to do it whether we give them an abatement or not. This is just another case of an entity subsidizing big business.
Okay.
There's a book been written lately entitled Free Lunch.
All right. Thank you, Al. Bob, the bottom line is there is a lot, and Al alluded to it, there's a lot of money to be made on that site.
Right.
And, you know, this casino issue has always been about money. Will that win in the long run and a deal will get done?
It seems that way. You know, I'm really – the interesting thing is that, you know, the mayor's staff didn't sound too concerned about, you know, the request or, you know, that things wouldn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
The reaction from city council, though, was pretty strong. Mike Mental, the council president, said that, you know, he expects them to stick to their end of the bargain. You know, other council members said the same thing, that they think Penn National should not get government help, that they said they would do it on their own. And these are council members who, you know, only one council member spoke out publicly before last fall's vote,
mm-hmm.
and said she was against the whole measure. So the others were not anti-casino. They kind of steered clear of the issue, but only one person spoke out against it at that time. So
it could be tough sledding at city council if
right,
it gets there.
Right.
All right, thanks very much. Bob Vitale, City Hall reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, helping us understand this. You can't write this stuff, Bob. This is just it's a new chapter in this casino story every single couple months or so.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, Bob Vitale from the Columbus Dispatch. When we return, we'll speak with Congressman-elect Bob Gibbs. He's the Republican who defeated Democrat Zach Space in Ohio's 18th district. We'll ask him what lies ahead in his new role and what lies ahead in Washington. When All Sides continues on WOSU.
As a crusading New York attorney general, Elliot Spitzer made powerful enemies before a sex scandal ended his political career. On the next Fresh Air, Alex Gibney talks about his new documentary about Spitzer, Client 9. Gibney spoke to Spitzer's Wall Street adversaries and the madam of his escort service.
Vice just took over virtue. He could not control himself.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon. Go behind the scenes at WOSU with our e-newsletters. Find out what our classical music hosts are listening to. Get the latest news from NPR and the award-winning WOSU news team. Learn about volunteer opportunities and more. Visit WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters.
Support for WOSU comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting Leanne Rimes, touring in support of her upcoming release, Lady and Gentleman, Sunday, November 7th at the McCoy Center for the Arts in New Albany. Details at McCoyCenter.org.
48 degrees in downtown Columbus, a slight chance of rain this afternoon, otherwise partly sunny and a high of 54. There is a chance of rain tonight as well, mostly cloudy, a low of 35 degrees. A chance of rain Friday morning, mixing with some light snow showers before 10 a.m., and then rain showers for Friday. Cloudy skies and a high of 43. Mostly sunny looking ahead to Saturday, a high of 42. All Sides continues on to WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. As we have heard over the past couple of days, voters around the nation voted for change, and here in Ohio, voters voted for a big change. In every case where they had a choice, they chose the Republican over the Democrat. In contested races, I should say. There was a choice in every race. But in all the big races, the Republican won. It started with the governor's office, all statewide offices, and Congress. Ohio had five competitive congressional races this year, and all five went to the Republican. Among them, Ohio's 18th district, which is in eastern central Ohio, Republican Bob Gibbs ousted Democrat and two-term incumbent Zach Space. And Bob Gibbs joins us now. Mr. Gibbs, you ran a hardline conservative campaign calling for fiscal responsibility, the end of deficit spending, and the repeal of the health care law. Do you think the voters have given you and those who agree with you a mandate to do those things?
Well, I think the voters were pretty clear all the way across the country that they're looking for some change, and they realize that Washington's, something's matter in Washington. They think Washington's broken, and we need to fix it. And I think, you know, they realize you can't spend money we don't have and borrow money at these levels and rack up this massive debt. And they know they can't do it in their own households, and they're really concerned, and it's all about jobs and the economy. We got to get people back to work and restore that confidence so employers out here will start investing in their businesses again and start hiring people back.
Our phone number is 292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Congressman-elect Bob Gibbs. Our question is, what should the next Congress make as its top priority? Give us a call, 292-8513. What is your top priority, Mr. Gibbs?
Fiscal responsibility. We've got to quit spending money we don't have. We got to cut this deficit spending. That's my number one. And then number two, we have to roll back these massive tax increases and provide some certainty to our the people out here and our employers that we're moving forward on solid economic ground so they'll have the confidence to invest in their businesses.
When you say roll back the tax increases, you're talking about the planned expiration of the so-called Bush tax cuts, correct?
That's part of it, but there's been a lot of tax increases built into this, what they've passed here in the last couple of years. But obviously, we're looking at the largest tax increase in American history come January 1st, and that's going to be a disaster if that's allowed to happen. But there's been others, in the health care bill, there's quite a few tax increases and some other issues.
How can you talk about deficit reduction, but how can you do that if you continue to cut taxes or roll back tax increases, as you say?
Well, people, I guess I call it the stagnant model. Cut taxes, you will bring more revenue into all levels of government because you're going to increase economic activity. And right now, because all this uncertainty coming out of Washington, D.C., we've got a lot of people and a lot of businesses and employers that are sitting on their hands, and they're not making those capital investments, and they're not growing their businesses, and they're not hiring people. So that, the consequence is less tax revenue coming in. And, you know, if we keep more money in those in the risk takers' pockets and make those investments, you'll have more money come in down the road because you're going to have more people working in an economy that's growing. And, you know, obviously, but if you keep running these huge deficits on the spending side, that creates more of the uncertainty, and the private sector is not making those investments.
Bob Gibbs is our guest. He's the congressman-elect from Ohio's 18th district, recently elected just on Tuesday, defeating Zach Space, and he will join Congress in January. Mr. Gibbs, one of the votes that's likely to come up in the next Congress is raising the debt ceiling, allowing the government to borrow more money than the ceiling would allow for. Would you support raising the debt ceiling?
I've got real concerns about that. You know, I'm hoping that my colleagues that are in Congress now are looking at seriously what we can start cutting, and so that doesn't have to happen, because I think that that creates a big problem. And the reason it gives me heartburn is, you know, if we get there in January and start taking office and we have to raise the debt ceiling just to keep things functioning, we've only had, you know, short while not enough time to do anything. So I'm hoping that trying to pass that on to the leaders in the Congress now that they need to be working on a plan so we don't have to do that.
Most observers say that Congress has to pass the debt ceiling, otherwise the U.S. would default on its loans and it would lead to another economic crisis, perhaps even worse than the one we saw in 2008.
Well, I just don't know the details yet, and obviously we can't default on our loans. Mm-hmm. But we need to make sure if the only option we have is to raise the debt ceiling because we just haven't had time to get our arms around it because we're taking over control, then we have to have a plan in place where we don't have to do it again. And we're going to show that we're making cuts in the spending. But, you know, like I say, it's kind of a catch-22 if we get there in January and find out we have to raise the debt ceiling on January 15th. You know, that's going to be a problem. But if we have to, because we have no other choice, because we have, you know, the short time we've been there, we definitely have to have a plan that says here's what we're going to do so we don't have to do it again.
Okay.
And I just don't have the details, but obviously we can't default on our loans.
Andrew's on the line. He has a question. Go ahead, Andrew.
Mr. Gibbs, I'd like to know exactly where you're going to cut the budget. I know we have to be fiscally responsible. You just said, though, you're for cutting taxes and letting that make more economic activity, but frankly, that's kind of a worn-out policy for economic activity, as pointed out by the guy who constructed it, Reagan's budget director. So where are you going to cut the budget? Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the question. I think where we can start, we should start a goal right off the bat to get our what I call the domestic discretionary spending down to fiscal year 08 levels, because in the last 2 years, that the domestic discretionary spending, I'm not talking – this is not talking Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. This is everything else that's spent domestically has grown double digits the last two fiscal years. And even in 08, it was pretty good level. So we need to look at all those areas and see if we can get that area of domestic discretionary spending down. And then we start tackling the other things. But we're going to have to prioritize. And we need to have a serious conversation with the American people, because this is going to – there's going to be some, challenges here, but I think we have to realize if we don't accomplish this, it's going to happen essentially by default short down the road here, not that far away, because at the level of spending that we've been going with these deficits and debt, it's not sustainable, and the value of the dollar is going to go through the basement floor, and then our creditors decide they might not want to loan anymore or buy our debt, so the day of reckoning is coming, you know, one way or the other, so we better tackle it while we still are in a position to do that.
Discretionary spending is 12% of the federal budget. To really make inroads into the deficit and into the debt, would you agree that Congress has to look at Social Security and Medicare and defense spending, the other big three?
I think everything has to be on the table. Now, when it comes to Social Security and Medicare, we have to honor our commitments. Okay, we have a contract with retirees and people that paid into the system. I think we have to honor that commitment. But I think there's plenty of areas to look at waste, fraud, and if there's duplication to get to make the system more efficient. So we have to look at that. And defense, you know, we got a great military, and we're going to support our military personnel. But there might be some things there where we can pick up some efficiencies.
We're speaking with Bob Gibbs. He is the congressman-elect from Ohio's 18th District. He just defeated incumbent Zach Space in this week's election. Your district's economic woes really predate the economic meltdown of 2008. A lot of your counties have been above the statewide average as far as unemployment. And the district needs a lot of help, both to build business and to help the folks who are unemployed. Would you vote against any extension of unemployment benefits, which could help a lot of folks in your district?
I'd have to see the details of what they were extending and really look at that in discussion. I'm not really prepared to answer without seeing the specifics. I obviously, unemployment is a safety net. It's helped a lot of people get through. But I've had a lot of people tell me, too, out in the district that, you know, sometimes they can't go take a job because there's other considerations and they lose their unemployment. You know, I'd like to see a structure where if you can get a job and it's at lesser pay than what you were getting before, or issues like that, and maybe gradually wean people off unemployment, not just cut them off 100%, and get people back. Because it seems like in some times you hear about there's just a disincentive for people not to look too hard. So we need to look at that. I think we need to do some look at some reforms and how we do the unemployment. But you know, the safety net's important for people and help people get back on their feet. And lots of times it's not their fault. Most of the time it's not their fault. You know, it's just things that happen that get out of their control. But you know, we have to make sure that if there's jobs out there and you know, people are going to have to take them and still look for a better job, and unemployment taxpayers can't be funding all this all the time.
Bob Gibbs is our guest. He is the congressman-elect from Ohio's 18th District, which is just a bit east of Columbus and extends sort of along the extends east across Ohio, almost to the Ohio River, but not quite. Mr. Gibbs, we've been hearing a lot about how the Tea Party Republicans, particularly in the House, led to the recapture of the House for the Republican Party. But we've also heard some concern that the Tea Party Republicans are pulling the GOP too far to the right. Do you consider yourself a Tea Party Republican?
Well, you know, I don't know. I've gone to the rallies. I spoke at the rallies. I'm in full support what I call the mainstream Tea Partiers. You know, they've been about fiscal responsibility, lower taxes, and less government. And I'm definitely 150% behind that. I go and I meet with them, and we're on the same page. I guess I just don't go out there and say I'm this or that. I'm just out there working hard to represent the district and what's good for the people of Ohio and America. And you know, and I think that it all comes down to the jobs and the economy. And you know, I've said this to people. What's the most important thing in your family? And the number one most important thing in your family is everybody's got their health. And if you don't have a serious health problem in your family, then number two issue is everybody's got a job, or, you know, you got fiscal, financial security. And so that's what I'm all about. And so I'm not, you know, just out there saying, oh, I'm a Tea Partier. I'm out there to make America strong again and make government accountable and responsible.
Will the Tea Party, to use the term, Tea Party Republicans make it difficult for the Republican House leadership to compromise with the president and Democrats in the Senate?
Well, I don't think we're going to compromise if the compromise is about more deficit spending and higher taxes and bigger government. We're not going to compromise. I'm not going to compromise on that, and I don't think the leadership in the House is. I've had that conversation with Leader Boehner and Eric Cantor and others. And you know, one thing about, we got a democratically represented government, and I think our representatives that got elected are listening to the people. And you know, there's not going to be compromise that way. Now, if the president and my colleagues on the other side of the aisle want to work to cut the deficit and lower taxes and get this economy going, then we'll get something accomplished.
One compromise that's been floated out there, I think, in recent days is the Bush tax cuts, extending the Bush tax cuts. Democrats want to extend them for just folks making $250,000 or less. Republicans and some Democrats want to extend it for everybody. The compromise is, I think the president mentioned it yesterday, is that they could go along with that or part of that if they could close some of the tax loopholes that some businesses take advantage of. Is that a compromise you could live with?
I might have problems with that. Nearly 50% of our small employers would have taxes increased. And people don't realize that a lot of our small employers are S-Corps or LLCs, limited liability companies, and those are pass-through entities that pay an individual tax return.
But the compromise is those folks would not see the tax increase or would see the tax cuts extended, but other companies would. Other companies would pay more.
Well, not if you cut it off at $250,000. I think a lot of those people will see it because you can have people that are small employers out here with, say, 20, 30 employees that maybe do make $300,000 a year, but I can guarantee you that most of those people don't take that $300,000 and take it and off to the bank, that they're reinvesting it back in their businesses.
But what if you said, okay, well, you can have your tax cuts. These businesses you talk about, you can have, we'll extend the tax cuts to everybody. But on the other hand, we're going to close some loopholes that affect larger businesses, which would amount to a tax increase for them. Would you go along with that?
Well, I'd have to see what these so-called loopholes are. Everybody's got a definition of what a loophole is, and when you dig into the specifics of some of that, I think you start realizing that it's not really what you think is might be a loophole. I'd have to look at to see what those specific quote loopholes are.
I mean, what's your feeling? Will there be compromise? I mean, I think that voters are disenchanted with both. With all aspects of government. You see, the congressional approval ratings were way down. The president's approval rating is down. Turnout was down in this election. There's a lot of dissatisfaction there on the voters. I think you saw John Stewart's rally, all the people they attracted for whatever reason. There seems to be a call for both sides to work together.
I'm all for working together as long as we don't compromise our core principles.
But don't you have to compromise a little to work together?
Well, it depends what you know. If you go on to the core, for me, the core is you can't keep this increased deficit spending and increase in taxes. I don't think there's much room for compromise there. Here you've got a Congress, the current Congress and administration, that have added $3 trillion to the national debt in less than 2 years. And it's not working. We don't have a robust economy. We don't have a growing economy at all. We don't have jobs being created. And so if they think you got to spend more money to create more jobs, or it's not working. I'm for keeping as much money in the private sector, because it's the private sector that creates jobs out there, and it's not government. So this policy the Keynesian economic theory doesn't work.
Okay.
And I can't compromise on that.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Bob Gibbs, Congressman-elect for Ohio's 18th District. You've been listening to All Sides on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.